and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Vogelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 636.
That's right. The much-awaited, anticipated, debated proposal.
Consummated.
Yeah. Issue. Whatever.
We can just quit tonight and just leave right now, Chad. It says, whatever. Maybe I'll get a clip of Archie Bunker. Whatever.
This one is called City of Love. Writer Jeremy Adams, artist Montos, colorist Romulo Fajardo Jr., letterer Dave Sharp, cover artist Zermanico, bunch of variant cover artists, assistant editor Jillian Grant, and editor Paul Kaminsky. We open up over Paris, where there is a Justice League response unit of Dove and Star Sapphire descending on Paris for some unknown thing. Star asks, you know, who called in the emergency, and Dove says some arrogant fighter jock with an ego the size of the Watchtower. And she goes, what are you talking about? And she's talking about me. It's Hal in a suit with what looks like two dozen roses. Hey, man looks good. What can I say? And they're going on a surprise date. So it wasn't really a Justice League emergency. So he offers to take her shopping real quick. We cut over to Dark Sector 7, where Krona, in his tattered, deformed Hal Jordan skin, is looking around for some transport and is being followed by the Guardians. He does not tell us anything about what he's actually looking for. He does say that he got off Oa easily because of the distraction of everything that was going on there, and that the Guardians followed him. And he says, basically, I just need to stay ahead of them, make sure I find it first, the truth, the whole truth. That's all we really know. Back over in Paris, Carol puts on her dress. They go out to dinner. They do some dancing. He tells her a bit about what's been going on with him, that we, you know, his visions of the future. She chides him, saying, you should have come to me first, and so on and so forth. And he says, you know, he's like, I didn't want you to worry about it. She said, I want to worry. I want you to worry me. We're in this together. And he says about that, he turns around to grab something, but Carol hears something, is distracted. Hal does not hear it. He tries to continue pushing whatever it is he's about to do. Clearly, he's about to propose. He's got the ring box in his hands. She says, we got to go. We got to find it. So they run off. And it turns out our villain of the issue is, it's Cupid, stupid. Sorry. Anybody who's watched Arrow will appreciate that reference. So Cupid is in Paris doing some things. It's Valentine's Day. It's a proposal issue. So, like, you know, of course it's got to be Cupid of all things. She throws a grenade at the people who are the police officers, military, whoever are trying to get her. They, you know, the Lanterns respond. She shoots off a missile. It explodes. Hal uses a construct fan to suck up away all the smoke. And blocks Cupid from getting away with a wall. But apparently she shot off something else earlier because another missile is coming towards them and knocks them onto the ground. They're okay, but they're just dazed. And this has knocked the ring box loose and it's on the ground next to Hal's body. He's getting up, but she now sees the box and she's like, did she ruin your proposal? Did she ruin my proposal? She loses her shit.
You know, like the 55th time she'd been proposed to, just not by Hal.
She unleashes a construct monster pit bull. Hal has to rein it in. Cupid is taken into custody. They get what Cupid stole, which is this crucifix, but there's this star sap. There's this small pink crystalline gem thing that that comes out of the center of the crucifix and flies its way onto Carol's ring, because apparently this is what was calling to her the entire time. And we'll circle back to this page, so I'm just going to read it out right here because it's the only thing of worth discussing really in terms of in depth in this issue. So this is the only piece I'll actually read. It says, Carol Ferris, once queen of the Zamorons, you are caretaker of what is left of the Star Sapphire. You are acquainted with one part of eight, that piece being twisted into an emotion, into a lantern. But it is much more. It is the greatest force in the universe. Split apart long ago, eight pieces hidden, eight aspects of love. Eros, philia, storge, ludus, pragma. It's a bunch of stuff here. It says, mania you know, agape you have found, the others you must find to wield the full Star Sapphire. Shine the light of love into the universe once again. They apparently both have heard this, and it looks like you got another mission to go on, Carol. And he's like, we could still, and he brings out the box. And she says, no, you know, just ask me again in the future when we can be present. And they kiss and fly off, and they head away. Meanwhile, over on the moon, Kyle is playing baseball with himself and smacking it out of the park and talking himself up about how he's the torchbearer and, you know, so on and so forth. Hal comes over, catches him in the act. They have a bit of a moment. And then they reflect on the gorgeousness of the Earthrise on the moon. And he says, you know, hey, if I were to ever have a sidekick, I could hope, I wish you, which sounds like such a dig, honestly. If I had a sidekick, it'd be you. Not as if Kyle's not his own full-fledged lantern, but that's essentially what he says. And he's basically saying, hey, I've got to go out and do something. You know, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be gone, but take care of her. Take care of Earth. He says his ride is here. He disappears in this flash of green light. And then he is in front of one of the Wonder Twins, Jan, in this weird base. I don't know where Jan is at presently. I'm sure this has something to do with probably something else going on in the DCU right now. But it, you know, to be continued in the epic oversized anniversary issue, Green Lantern 600. Then everything changes.
Yeah.
As if we haven't heard that 60,000 times.
Yeah. And then. Everything's changing, so we get Kyle, a wrestler, and Odyssey. That's the other thing we could talk about. And Odyssey. So everything changes, but probably not for the better. I also like, it's really easy to read into when Hal's talking about she's gorgeous and keep her and protect her, that it's has double meaning, but of all people to be saying it to when it comes to Carol, it should not be Kyle. Oh, but and keep it in your goddamn pants. This was essentially 90% more of the same, except the Star Sapphire reveal, if you will. And we finally get a Krona cameo for the first time in the four issues. It was, I don't know, it was okay. I mean, did I hate it? No. The artwork is hit or miss. Some parts look really good, some parts don't. I mean, I don't really think it looks really like Hal for the most part. I mean, when he's all dressed up with the bow tie and the roses, that's a cool picture. And then, I mean, Carol looks good in her dress. And later on, there are a few times when he's in his Green Lantern costume, especially the scene when he goes, this isn't how I wanted to do this. The only thing I like about it kind of looks like old school Green Lantern. It kind of reminds you like old school, like Gil Kane, how it started Green Lantern. So that part, I at least appreciate. And for a character I know nothing about and don't care about, Cupid was drawn ridiculously well. I think she's probably the most consistently well-drawn character in the book. Carol looks good. It's very erratic, the art. Like some close-ups, it's very well detailed, and Carol looks really good. And other, it's just like no line, no definition, no lines, no anything. As far as the whole proposal garbage, the reality is pretty much Jeremy was damned if he did and damned if he didn't, because we, you know, like you've said and other people have talked about and we've discussed in the show too, the idea that, well, them walking off into the sunset together at this time doesn't really feel deserved. So in a way, it not happening makes more sense, but yet the whole BS prepping this up, oh, he's going to propose, and this cover showing in the ring, and the and love is in all this stuff, and building up to a proposal that really was never actually going to ever get to truly be a proposal. That kind of seemed like it was pointless on that level. It's, I mean, other than to show theoretically, conceptually, that Hal is ready to take that step, and that Carol's kind of ready to accept, but yet neither one of those things happens. And now that Carol's kind of going off in her own hero's quest, probably, to find all these other pieces of eight, which reminds me of the last Pirates movie, that World's End, of the original trilogy. It's like the nine pieces of eight, or whatever it is. That's what I thought of. Other than that, I don't know. I mean, the Krona stuff, again, it's like you said, it's more cryptic. It's kind of like more cryptic garbage, but, oh, they think this is what's going on, or the emotions, and they're trying to get kind of like Krona talks about there, what's going on really on Oa right now, how they're kind of trying to kumbaya all the emotions. It's like, but they really understood what was going on. And the Guardians are doing like the worst jobs ever of being like detectives, because they're so close and they're obvious right behind, except for the fact that now that all the Guardians look like old school Guardians, which they did not look like before. Again, they kind of look old school. I don't know. I certainly hope, now that we got this proposal stuff pushed aside, I certainly hope that issue 600 is going to be about Krona and what's going on. I certainly would like to think that's what's going on. Obviously, also, Kyle was called to the moon by Hal, because Hal was basically, literally, figuratively, since we have the double torchbearer reference, that he temporarily is also having the torch passed back to him to be Green Lantern of Earth at the moment. So that's another nice touch. I know what you mean about what he was saying about the sidekick stuff, but it was Hal's own awkward way of saying that basically if I could have picked somebody basically to follow in my footsteps, it kind of would be you. Mm-hmm. That it's something, and that because of the fact that he references Ollie and he references Batman and even Wally with Barry and things like that, that's his own way of saying it, since he does kind of say that you're still the best of us and everything. I think it's more that he's showing his respect for Kyle and everything that Kyle's been through and what he's capable of than just saying, hey, you know, if I needed someone to carry my jacket, it would be you, Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree on the art. It looks good in places. It looks weird in others. I think that we saw that a lot with Montos during War Journal. So nothing new there. I liked the conversation between Hal and Carol in terms of her saying, like, you should have told me. And, you know, the kind of
growth in a relationship that comes with, look, like, I understand that you don't want to burden me, but I want your burdens as much as you should want mine. Like, that sort of, like, we share each other's weights. We help carry one another, like that sort of a thing. So that was nice to see that it's not, because, you know, it's very easy to do like a date or a proposal issue and make it very surface level and like, you look pretty and I've loved you since I was a kid and like, you know, all this stuff. But there is a bit of like actual relationship, you know, growth and learning here and what they and the way they talk to each other in this small moment. So that's nice, especially in something that I assumed was going to be, you know, fairly surface level and a, you know, bait and switch by DC and, you know, all this stuff, which it ended up being. But at least there was some depth in it. So that was nice. It being Valentine's Day, it being Cupid. OK, whatever. But OK, it was all right. It's just that the whole thing, she says, not like this, not when you have to go and I have to stay. Ask me again when you come back, when you're safe. Ask me when I can actually be present. We can be present. That isn't that just saying, ask me when there's nothing going on?
Pretty much. Yeah.
So never.
Yeah, that's what I kind of said to Anas today. It's like, well, now that they ended this the way they did, and it's like, We'll probably pick it up like forever down the road, maybe when someone else is writing the book, because the odds of us revisiting this, let's say within 10, I mean, unless they're going to try to do the BS where they're going to circle back around this by Green Lantern 50. But the reality is this is probably on the shelf now. It's like, okay, we've made the progress enough to say where Hal is ready to ask the question. And Carol's technically willing to accept. Kind of like, you know that, because you know that, you don't really have to do it. It's kind of one of those jobs. That's kind of how they've seemingly approached this. It's like, which is still progress in the relationship, but it kind of, like many things in this book, it's pretty emotionally unsatisfying.
Yeah. So I just, it also does the thing that I think, I mean, this is the sort of, and look, I've been single forever, so, you know, you tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like as you grow up, you start to realize certain things. Like, for instance, one of the things that I feel I've come to understand is like when you are in a relationship and you get to the point where, you know, marriage is an option and so on and so forth, the fact that you will be proposing to a person should not be a surprise. When and how is the surprise? But you have the conversation about where are we headed? Do we see marriage in the future? Is this something that you know, you don't go into it going like, well, she's going to say no because we haven't ever discussed this. I'm just springing this whole thing on her at the moment. You have those conversations, much like you have the conversation is, do we want kids? You know, so on and so forth. How are we handling finances? Like the whole where we're going thing is important. And yes, I see, like, you know, if you were to propose, I would say yes. I feel like we're ready to take that next step. So the proposal itself is the surprise, the when, the how, that's all the way you, but the, not the fact that you will be proposing at some point. So for them to do the whole stereotypical, you know, spring the surprise on her thing, like, this is just more of along the lines of what I've been saying online and what I've been saying on the show is that, okay, in continuity, these characters have been around for decades and they've been on again and they've been off again. So, like, you know, in some way I can see almost anybody making the case for it's about time. But in this series, Jeremy has put in some good legwork in making me buy in to Hal and Carol as a couple and actually want to see more of it, because before, honestly, didn't really care. But he's put in some legwork, but we haven't seen them together in story enough to get a handle on their relationship and where they're at with each other to feel like this is logical, that they're ready for this, that it, I don't know. It just, I've been talking about it ad nauseum, honestly, and I really don't feel like waxing poetic on it anymore, but it just feels like it came out of left field, especially when we just got three issues of filler for us to suddenly get this moment. Like, we, I don't know, it just, it feels wrong to do this now.
Yeah, again, we've talked about this too. It's sometimes you sit there and you just try to figure out what exactly is Jeremy trying to do, what his goal is with this book. Now, obviously, part of the goal was to deepen Hal and Carol's relationship, and maybe that's all it is. Maybe he never wanted to get to the finish line with this. Maybe he has an ambitious Jeffrey Thorne-like plan that eventually he would get to it down the road, or maybe he just feels like his job is to kind of shepherd this along, no pun intended, but shepherd wherever he is, move this down the road so now somebody else down the road has a better foundation and building blocks if they want to take this and finally do the payoff on it. At least you don't have to build it up. So like you were talking about how this is undeserved. And now if you kind of keep the status quo of their relationship as far as they continue to be close when they interact, that it's a much more healthy, quote unquote, relationship than it ever was before. That's a passing of a baton. Someone else can take it over the finish line. Get it to the finish line. But I don't know what he's really trying to do with the book. And it's kind of, I mean, I guess it's good that we're coming back to the Krona thing. It kind of seems weird because now it seems like we probably are going to get some resolution to the Krona stuff in issue 600, which would have, if they had been building up to it by actually giving us bits and pieces of the storyline in the previous three issues, then maybe that wouldn't seem so kind of fast. But I don't know. I'm certainly more interested in it being if it's dealing with Hal and his visions and Krona and the Guardians, then dealing with, oh, we got to plan a wedding. Issue 600 is the wedding issue. So I'm glad that's where it looks like it's heading. But I don't know.
I just feel that we spent 3 issues of Hal jumping from person to person to talk about his vision. And by the time we circle back around to the main story, we still get 2 pages of nothing burger with Krona. Still more mysticism and still more being vague and so on and so forth. The primary focus of this issue, when we finally dive back into the story, is Hal and Carol. So if the focus was going to be Hal and Carol all along for this issue, why did we spend so much time of Hal utterly ignoring, for the most part, his relationship with Carol? Because he had a small conversation, I think, with Ollie, right? Over dinner or whatever, or something like that. Very briefly. Why didn't he talk to Ollie about his relationship with Dinah and what that means and seek advice there? Why didn't he talk about taking her to dinner and, hey, Ollie, I need a favor from you to get this dinner in Paris and so on and so forth? Because he mentions that here, that he owes Ollie for this. Why didn't he talk to Barry about Iris? Why didn't he talk to Bruce? Because Bruce has a very complex, like, yeah, sure, Ollie and Dinah and Barry and Iris are, you know, big, important relationships and pretty, for the most part, pretty well established. But if we're going to talk about something comparative to what Hal has with Carol, Bruce and Selena is definitely comparable enough to probably seek advice from Bruce on that stuff. So, like, why did we spend 3 issues of him looking into, and not even really looking into his vision, because that was the intent of it, but we never really learned anything about it throughout all 3 issues, only to get this next issue of finally diving back into the story where we get 2 pages of nothing about it again, but primarily focus on this Carol thing. It just, what were those 3 issues for?
I don't know. I don't really know. I mean, when you think about it, the only thing concrete you get about what's going on with Hal is the whole tachyon thing.
Yeah,
because Barry was just pure, like you pointed out, was just pure speculation without any evidence, which then again, maybe I thought about this yesterday, actually. Maybe Jeremy has like a little bit of Rian Johnson in him, where he always has to subvert expectations, so he has no problem having characters say things that are completely factually inaccurate with no evidence to support it, and trying to make us believe, oh, this is true, just like 3 issues later, 2 issues or 3 issues later, saying, hey, guess what? Everything I told you was, you didn't think was true? Well, guess what? It isn't. But yet when people make half-assed conjecture that it turns out to be true. It kind of reminded me of in V for Vendetta with the detective who kept saying, it's just a feeling all the time. He always knew what was going to happen, and then he kept referring to that. He always had a feeling about how things were going to play out before they did. That Barry's thing will probably be true just because he pulled it out of his you-know-what, and there's really no evidence to support it either, but he never passed it on saying it was a fact, as opposed to, you know, the entities and the Guardian and the Parallax stuff. But Jeremy's also kind of proven himself to be an unreliable narrator, so why should we believe Barry, think Barry's right? But I don't know. We should have gotten more to the story. But then again, I guess we can keep our fingers crossed. Maybe we're going to get like a huge dose of it in issue 600, legacy number. Maybe, and maybe that'll make it a little better. But I don't know. It's just kind of going nowhere.
Mm-hmm. The only redeeming quality about this, besides the art and the interpersonal moments I mentioned before, because like I said, I did like that conversation these two had, like continuing to see Star and Dove's relationship as friends build. It was brief, but the fact that Hal reached out to Dove and asked for her help, and that's acknowledging that friendship has grown. So I like that. So let's focus on this Star Sapphire page, because this is the biggest thing, and I love this. Because we have been talking for a long time, I think Dan might have been one of the last people to mention this, about the different aspects of emotions and the emotional spectrum. Talk, like, you know, if you talk about fear, the fear you feel when you are fearing for your own life is different than the fear you feel when you are surprised or scared, or, you know, so on and so forth. There's different types of fear. There's different types of rage and so on and so forth. Different types of love. So we're breaking this open a little bit. But what's interesting is Mania, you know. Agape, you have found. The others, you must find.
Okay. I don't know. It's entirely possible for anybody to know anything after off the top of their heads, depending their on their own interests and so on and so forth in life. That said, I find it hard to believe that somebody just knows all of the names of the 8 different types of love off the top of their head and didn't have to look it up. Because if you look it up, you learn what each of these mean. So I don't think Jeremy is misunderstanding the meaning behind these terms, because he probably had to, again, look it up to verify while he was writing. Mania, you know. Mania is, and I found several different things online, but most of them said roughly the same thing, so I'm going to trust this image I have in front of me. Mania is described as a madness that drives you towards obsession, that type of love. Okay, she was Predator, early Silver Age, you know, Star Sapphire's obsession with Green Lantern, so on, like, obsession, we know. Great. Agape, you have found. Now, we're just talking about the relationship, but we were just talking about the relationship between Hal and Carol. We were just going through the proposal, so on and so forth. Okay, so we would assume agape is that their relationship. Agape is actually defined as a love for the universe that is bigger than yourself.
Unconditional, sacrificial, and selfless care for pretty much anything or everyone.
Yes. Okay. So the others, first of all, Eros, the romantic love that can break our hearts. Are we saying Star Sapphire is not familiar with Eros? Or are we saying that mania is already a part of what she has with her ring and her familiarity with the Star Sapphire? Agape, you have found, as in you literally just found the piece that flew onto your ring, and that particular piece signifies agape.
Yeah, that's the way I take it.
Okay. Because the idea that she's not familiar with Eros when she's in this relationship and was just happy to be proposed and so on and so forth was concerning to me, because I was like, wait, What are we saying about their relationship if she's not familiar with Eros? Just real quick, the other ones: Storage, the love that comes from feeling secure in those you trust. Ludus, playful love for the young couples. Philatula, whatever it's called, loving and accepting who you are. Pragma, the enduring love that lasts a lifetime. Phyla, the love you feel for your closest friends.
Yeah, so I'm going to assume that these are literally pieces of the puzzle. These are pieces she has to find, because they talk about the first part that she's already acquainted with basically has been twisted into an emotion and that into a lantern and blah, blah, blah. So that's basically her star sapphire powers as she has known them and how she has used them. But I guess the ring and the lantern, that is the
I wonder if it means maybe like the, because it wasn't always a ring. She had a gem, right?
Yeah, you're probably correct. But it goes back to that. So no matter how we define it now, that piece has to be mania. And then she just got agape. So yeah, she's gonna have to find the other pieces. That's what it appears to be. So this is going to be like a hero's quest thing for Carol. She's going to be. Now, the question is, I wonder where she's going to find all these. I hope it's not going to be one of those real convenient things where all these pieces are still on Earth unless we get another logical explanation for that.
Well, it was so agape. If we're saying agape was the piece, it flew up from a relic crucifix. So agape is most often the love that's because Christians use the word agape all the time. I assume that there's some history or meaning behind that. I don't know. Again, split apart long ago, 8 pieces hidden, 8 aspects of love, but it doesn't tell you where to find them. So, but the fact that Mania found her early on in her Star Sapphire career, we're assuming probably it was the gem. The gem that flew up from the crucifix is agape. Maybe the restaurant. It's just yet another thing of these cosmic truths being based on Earth. But if then we go back to like that splash page from Blackest Night where we figured out the origin of the entities and the debate on whether or not the Predator was coming from the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. Looking at looking at agape in Christian theology, it says it's the highest self-sacrificial, unconditional love, defining God's character in the core of Christian life, characterized by actively seeking the well-being of others without, yeah, so without expecting anything in return.
Of, yeah, yes. Christ's sacrifice for all, the love of everyone. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So
they could be making a tie there. That's why it's on a crucifix, yeah, or just so happened to be on a crucifix for no reason.
Well, either way. But yes, that's probably why it was on that object. But
I would love to see where this goes. I would love to see how they define this. How does she act different? Do her powers act different? Why do they act different? I'm interested in that. That's the only thing that really saved this issue for me in terms of keeping my interest peaked.
Well, I mean, again, but it's like everything else. He has a little vindity in him that he comes up with some potentially good ideas or stories, but it's the execution thereof at the moment that has kind of failed. So while I agree, depending how they handle this, it could be interesting. I mean, are we going to see Carol next issue? Is she going to be part of next issue? Or are there going to be, even though you assume Hal's going to be the dominant force in the next issue, is Carol going to play a role too? Is it like a side quest? Are we going to see that? And now that they're not getting married, seemingly, anytime soon, how exactly is this going to explain Hal's disappearance, which is kind of curious when he's not the main Green Lantern for several issues after this. But I think it could be good. But the Krona stuff, again, it's not moving the plot. It's not moving the plot very far ahead. And again, now we have to wonder, I mean, I guess we're going to find this out in Core. Why the hell did he leave why did he leave the entities, or how secure are the entities? Maybe that's why the entities were reaching out to Guy, because now the Krona's gone. They have an opening for a jailbreak if somebody can rescue them.
Yeah, I think the other thing, thank you for bringing up the entities, because I wanted to say this earlier. I totally forgot to. We're assuming that the words spoken to Carol are Predator, right? Because it looks like Predator's font.
In this issue? Hold on. Yeah. I didn't necessarily read into that at all.
It looks like Predator's font that they use when Predator is speaking.
I didn't take it that way. You are correct, but that could just be like, they could just consider that a general Sapphire font, because there aren't that many Sapphires we ever see talk to each other, and certainly not in ages. I did not take it that way. We could find out that that's the case, but it would be more compelling argument if they mentioned something about, I can help you find all the pieces, or come or find me and I can help you, as opposed to what we saw at the end of Core, when even if it was just symbolically like in like almost a hologram, that all the little entity babies came to see God because they needed help. You could be right. I didn't take it at all that way. I just took it that this was, because it's coming out of her ring. So I'm just assuming when that something was something about that piece being connected or reunited with her ring and those two pieces coming together, that's what's the bigger picture or whatever is going on. Because that seems to be a common theme in all these subplots to Jeremy. It's just, there's something bigger going on that we don't understand. And let's see when we get payoff on these and how satisfying they are, too.
They could be teasing Golden Age Star Sapphire.
Yeah, she could.
Which is something we'll have to talk about another time. But just so you guys know out there, if you're curious about who the Golden Age Star Sapphire is, check out Mosaic Comics on YouTube. Dan has a whole video about the Golden Age Star Sapphire. So, but yeah, that's it. So anything else you want to say about this issue?
No, I don't think so. At least the mystery of what we're going to get in 600, I guess, at least increases my anticipation slightly than what I would have had if it was just, hey, Hal's getting hitched, whether it came off or not. But going into the issue, we were led to believe that Hal was getting married. That would have been a little less appealing to me than what's going on here. So, but we just got to see what the payoff is and what the change to the status quo is, that not just because of the hype on the last page, but just in general, because we need to know why Hal, what is Hal's status at the end of 600, why he's still clearly not going to be going back to assume his own job and take his own position back by the end of 600. So,
yeah. All right, what's next?
So did you want to give your great thoughts on the solicit for Green Lantern 35, since I kind of aired a little bit of my dirty laundry in the mini episode? Not that everybody would listen to the mini episode, but I figured you would have some thoughts so we could kind of discuss it again for me, for the first time for you, if you wanted.
Yeah, sorry, I'm pulling it up now just so I don't mistake what it was.
There it is. Glitz the glam. Okay. And feel free to leave that silence in.
I was going to. I'll put crickets in instead.
No, I think the breathing is more poignant. I want to say that I trust where Jeremy is going and that he's going to make something interesting out of this, or that there's a reason that we're so focused on Odyssey and for the part, because he's not really mentioned, but I guess Omega Batman doesn't stick around very long. Although the variant cover for Green Lantern 35, one of them is Kyle in wrestling gear. So maybe, I don't know. We know Jeremy likes to focus on characters he creates or has special affinity for and brings in. Maybe Odyssey is just one of these. I suppose it's entirely possible. I believe she was created by Jeremy. I'm not entirely sure. But I believe so. And for him to play around with a character he created, obviously he has more leeway to do so, since I think he's the only one who's written her since she's been created. And I want to trust in the hope that getting Kyle as our featured Lantern, at least for a little while, will be fun, because I like Kyle and I would love to see the spotlight switch to him for a little bit. I like, on the surface, featuring Kyle instead of Hal for at least a little bit sounds fun to me. The problem is I have lost my faith that my ability to say I trust where Jeremy wants to go with this is any reason to be okay with a solicit, or the past several solicits since issue 600 has been solicited. So my hope is gone.
when I just, you say Walker in your neck of the woods fast.
Yeah. I just there's a lot I want to see flourish about a Kyle featured GL book. But I'm sorry, the building blocks aren't there, and historically speaking, we just wasted 3 or 4 issues. So how can I trust that we're going to move forward here? And just the idea, because you read these solicits, let's see, guest during the Flash, because I'm going back to 34. The Odyssey's got a devastating secret. 33 is this 600? Yes, this is 600. So really, solicit wise, there's nothing in the solicits for 34 or 35 that indicates that we'll be getting anything about Krona or Hal or Carol or anything moving forward. So as much as I want Kyle-focused GL stuff, we can't just fully abandon the plot unless we somehow think it's all going to be wrapped up with issue 600, which I really doubt, because Jeremy doesn't have the capacity to wrap anything up fully, as we know. Sorry, that's not criticism. That's fact at this point. Sorry. It just is what it is. So the fact that it seems like we're just going to be taking a side street for a while God knows what else goes on, is honestly the uncertainty of where this series is even going is almost more concerning than the solicit itself. I think that's what I'm getting at, because I've been talking around the point the entire time.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, first of all, I say this mostly kiddingly, but I don't know what's worse, whoever decided to write this solicit or whoever approved it, because why would anybody think this is going to interest anybody in reading this book? This is like, it's almost like it's an Odyssey book. And by the way, Kyle's guest starring. That's kind of how it reads. It's just sort of thrown in matter of factly that Kyle, well, reminding you, Kyle's Green Lantern, but don't expect to have any action or that you're going to care much. I think we had an unfortunate double whammy when we kind of started this era because it seems both Philip Kennedy Johnson and Jeremy both had, there's a lot of self-serving stuff going on. I mean, you can make a case that's always true or potentially always true with writers, especially if they've been around long enough and if they've created characters to try, or they have favorite characters, they're going to try to work them in. But we had, you know, we had a lot of stuff left over from Philip Kennedy's Superman stuff, Action Comics stuff or whatever, brought in needlessly into his Green Lantern stuff. You know, we know Jeremy's got the background with the animated show, which on the surface would be cool, but not that anything's ever really come of that so far. Certainly not of the Razor Aya stuff. Of all the stuff you would think there'd be more payoff for, there's been almost none of that. Brief moments, but so you have that. And because Hal, because he wrote Hal and Carol, that he wanted to explore some of that and all this stuff. So now we have another character, if you're correct, that he created this character. That would explain, again, from a self-serving perspective, why she was shoehorned into the book when she really has served no purpose so far. If anybody ever cared about the character, then maybe there's a little bit of it. You know, you got an extremely small percentage of people that would care about her. You've given the people who are unfamiliar with her no reason to care about her. And now you're hijacking, potentially based on solicits, a Green Lantern book to focus in on her. And it's like, I'm telling you, this is the odds of this book even being even in the top 150 by the time the sales come in for this issue. I would be stunned if that's the case. If it's, I mean, I said I picked a magic number like 175, but I think anything in the top 150, better than 150, would be stunning based on how bad the solicits have been for every single book past issue 600. And it's just, I don't know. I don't get it. And it just seems more aimlessness.
Yeah. Confirmed. She was actually created by Jeremy and she was created in this run. Saw her digging through the vaults or whatever, that was her first appearance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so the way she'd been kind of being described, even then, it seemed like somebody was supposed to know who she was, but I guess apparently, okay, so that's even more interesting. But she was kind of brought in almost on that red herring mission when Kyle was trying to get the power source or whatever. So whatever goal she seemingly might have had in that one issue, she's done nothing since.
Yeah.
In fact, it's been pretty clear up to this point that she has more of an interest in Connor because she has the hots for him than for Kyle. So why the hell is she even hanging around with Kyle? Maybe that's another subplot that we're going to get, that's going to be explored, why she hasn't just got out of Dodge. But I don't know. This sounds completely boring as hell.
And what about her relationship with Connor?
That's true, too. That's kind of fallen off. And what's the deal with Connor? Is he off of Owen now? I mean, yeah. Who the hell knows? Let's see where 600 ends up. But I tell you this, I only half jokingly, and at best it's half jokingly, said this might be the worst solicit for Green Lantern I've ever read. Because why would anybody give a shit about this? Why? I don't get it. Even if you're a Kyle person, it's like Kyle's being pushed to the back burner in his own book, which, you know, he's only going to have the book probably for maybe a max of 5 or 6 issues. And I don't get it. It just seems like I don't get what the end game is, because nobody, objectively speaking, can think, whether it's Jeremy or whether it's DC, that this change in direction is going to help, not hurt, but it's going to actually help the book, or can think that it's going to do anything but hurt the book from a sales perspective. And it's just going to feed the narrative, which, again, I don't believe conceptually, fundamentally, that what Comic Book Revolution has pushed constantly, that, oh, part of the reason why the book's gone into the crapper like over the last 10 issues or so is because Kyle's got a bigger focal point, which is still borderline true anyway. He's only had a few moments of relevance. But the reality is, this is just going to reinforce, and I think, an untrue narrative, but it's going to give supporting evidence to it by the fact that, look, because they put Kyle as the main Green Lantern and the book completely tanked. It's like if it does tank, it's going to tank because the story seems like crap. It's not going to be because it's featuring Kyle. You can make probably the same crappy story with Hal would sell a little better because Hal is a better selling character. But it's still not going to sell well. This book has been, I don't know. I'm puzzled by this. That's why I'm really hoping 600 is good. But if you're looking at the solicits for the Green Lantern books, that core definitely has the more interesting solicits.
Yeah, agreed. All right. What else?
I want to do briefly. Let's do finishing up on things that I've seen. I should have put this in the mini episode, but it's kind of more appropriate that I didn't because it's something related to something you and I discussed in the movie preview episode. I finally did watch the Netflix movie, The Rip, the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon movie.
Yeah.
Very, very good. I really, really enjoyed that movie. And Sasha Calle, Supergirl, has kind of been pushed to the back burner. She has a really cool supporting role. She was pretty excellent in that movie, too. But it's a good cast. It has a bunch of twists and turns in it, but I think they work. I mean, some aspects, once again, I think you can kind of predict a little bit of what's going on some level. But there are a lot of twists, and some of them pay off well. Even if you can pick up that about maybe 70% of what's really going on, I think there's still probably maybe, you know, at least 20 to 30% of stuff that the way they handle things that you may not have. Oh, I didn't really think that they were going this road, down this road, or this wasn't being done for this reason. No, I watched it a couple of weeks ago. That's why I'm surprised if I left it off my list of things that I had seen. But no, I really, really, really think it's good. Now, do I think Ben Affleck is good in it? No, I kind of think Ben Affleck is kind of like mailing it in. In all honesty, it's almost like Ben Affleck chose that role because he's allowed to smoke as much as he wants on camera. That's kind of almost how I felt. But Matt Damon is especially good in it. And like I said, Sasha Calle is also really good at it. And oh boy, Kyle Chandler's in it too. So I enjoyed that. I did finally, yes, last night I finished Alien Earth. So now that I've seen all 8 episodes, I enjoyed Alien Earth, and I'm glad it was renewed for a second season. So all the ridiculous number of unresolved cliffhanging points that were left at the end of episode 8, I'm glad we're getting another season because that would have sucked. Not that you can make it. I mean, you can make a case as nothing would be earth shattering towards the alien mythology as we already know it if it never got picked up upon technically, but there are some cool things they did in it. The acting is really good in it. So I really enjoyed Alien Earth. And that's it. Tomorrow I will be seeing Scream, one of the movies on my top 5 list. So we'll see how that goes.
Gotcha. Are you, you're Regal, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any comment on what was announced today about AMC? Did you see that?
Oh, you mean with the tickets?
Yeah.
See, I think it's funny you mention that because I actually watched a John Campia video on that. And I think some people are overlooking some of the obvious when they say they're going to reserve these seats or hold these seats for their paid tier members. I think we don't know the real question. And they kind of talk about this in the video is that how long the things are going to be reserved. It's probably only going to be, in all honesty, that you're going to have an opportunity to either buy your tickets or buy certain tickets for like a day or two in advance, and then or whatever it is, and then they're going to be open up to the public. It's not like they're going to be holding them like they kind of talk. What are you going to do? Hold them to opening night, and when are they going to release them? No, I don't imagine on God's green earth they're going to do that. I think you're going to have a window to get your seats. And yes, it's up in the air about what best seats are, which is why I think it's just going to be – I think they're just going to give their – paid tier members, I think they're just going to give them an early window to get whatever tickets they want, because it is subjective. What's a good seat for you might not be the best seat for me. So I think they're just going to have a window to reserve seats probably before other people. And even if it may not even be a day or two, maybe it's going to be like a few hours. Maybe it's going to be whenever tickets go on sale for something, you have like a 6-hour window where you get a 6-hour advance. I don't know. I'm not sure how they're going to do it. Because it's potentially could be a cluster no matter how they attempt it. But that's I'm going to assume it's going to be some variation on just having a window of opportunity to buy whatever seats that you want. Because it becomes dicey after that. I mean, yeah, they could just technically like rope off and make like a couple of rows right in the middle unavailable to anybody unless you're in the upper tier. They could do that for a day or two, I guess. And then if they're not all sold, then they become available first come, first serve after that. But I did hear about that. I thought that was an interesting take. In a way, it's not a crazy idea because it also arguably is a greater incentive for people to try to join their paid club, because that's another advantage you have without having to pay anything extra than you'd pay to just join the club. Now that's another perk that you get. So it would be. Yeah, I'll be curious to see what the details are.
Yeah, I might be going to see a movie here in the next few weeks. Did you know that one of the Fathom Events things, they're going to be re-airing the TMNT Secret of the Ooze for the 30th anniversary?
They've been advertising that a lot.
So my plan is to go see that. The problem is my niece is supposed to be born right around that time. So brand new baby is always a little bit of a hectic time. But I was going through the Fathom Event stuff and I saw like The Fifth Element in July and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in August and so on and so forth. I saw the Maltese Falcon's 85th anniversary, December 6th and 6th and 9th.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time is going to be in theaters again. I cannot miss that in December.
They're doing Ben-Hur, aren't they?
Beautiful Mind, V for Vendetta, Wildwood, Gone with the Wind, Citizen Kane, Ocean's 11, The Birdcage, Fried Green Tomatoes, Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, Ben-Hur, March into early April.
Ben-Hur maybe they're doing that, not just for any religious overtones, but also maybe because it's could be part of releasing some of the Oscar movies and things like that. But yeah, see, not that I have a great interest to go see Ben-Hur, but that's a movie that would be epic enough and stuff that you never saw on the big screen. See, for Fathom Event, those things are so ridiculously expensive compared to normal tickets. Yeah, I mean, they're not like crazy. I mean, they're not like $30 a ticket, but I mean, still. But the point is, it's a hell of a lot more than a regular movie ticket. So the reality, and Regal, we don't get any discount on Fathom Event stuff. You don't get anything on that. But the reality is, certain movies would be cool to see on the big screen, especially if you've never seen them. And that's what the appeal is for me, whether it's not just Regal, not just Fathom, but when they do re-releases of stuff. If it's stuff that I really like and have seen before and they re-release it and it's a regular price ticket, which means you basically, for Regal, I basically can get it for free other than the transaction fee, the 50 cents fee, that, yeah, I might do that too. But if it's for a Fathom, it's got to be something like something that's really cool, something that's important maybe that I've never seen on the big screen, but I would consider it. And so some of those things that you running through the list of some of the things you mentioned, some of those things would check again, moving out personal interest, because obviously Turtles would mean more to you than to me. But just looking at the basic list, you know, that's like half the list meets that checkbox. And then there's other lists that don't meet that checkbox. But it's very, you know, it's an individual decision, but it is more expensive. And it's got, so that's kind of a turnoff, generally speaking.
Yeah. No, I haven't even looked into the pricing. Maybe I should pull it up now. It doesn't seem, let's see, this is the 16th. I don't know what date that is. Let's see. No, it doesn't tell me. It wants me to like get all the way to check. Oh, so $12.50 is what it says. That's not too bad.
No, that's if they're charging. If that's the case, that's not, I'm trying to find, I'm on.
I have to see Maltese Falcon in theaters. That never getting it. I've never seen that in theaters.
No, I agree with you on that. I mean that's something special. I mean, it's like I know they played Godfather. I know they played Godfather 2, which is not my favorite. But I would definitely go see the regular Godfather. I don't know if I would. That's December, right? Yeah, that's December. It looks like. Yeah. I just want to see I'm looking now to see if they say what the interesting. There's a couple of people who actually bought tickets for Sunday, December 6th. A couple of people already bought tickets for that. That's kind of funny. Not surprising. I just want to see. No, see for Jeff. Oh, the $12.50 is a trial ticket. Did you look at Fandango?
Yeah, I'm on Fandango. It just says Fathom $12.50.
Yeah, $12.50 is it. $12.50 is the child fee. It's a child ticket, not counting the transaction fee. General admission is $17.69 for me.
No, it just said. So, like, I clicked on Maltese Falcon and for the 6th, and I don't even have a child option. It literally just says Fathom $12.50.
Babe, but did you pick your seat?
Yep.
And you picked a seat, so you got to the next part. I don't know. Then maybe there's something. Maybe at your theater, there's something different. But Fathom, Fathom, yeah, Fathom stuff here. And I think they raised that because I think the whole thing used to be around 16. But and obviously it would be less for me because I think I would save on the transaction fee. I think if I did it through the app, if I actually went through my Regal app, I think I might save money on the transaction fee. But the ticket, but you save nothing. You save nothing on the ticket. And that's part of the problem with the Fathom event thing. I've done a few. Some of those things are worth it. Like I did, like I think when we went to go see the double feature a couple of years ago, they had the Wolfman and Invisible Man double feature. That was kind of worth it. That's borderline worth it because those movies are short. You have to understand. Yeah, for me, I'm looking for me going through the app. It is a slightly less booking fee, but it's still like a $2 booking fee for an adult ticket and $2 booking fee. Actually, it's $14.50 if I wanted a child's ticket, and it's an even $17 if I wanted to get a general admission ticket. So that's still a lot pricier than what I'm used to, considering I don't pay nothing. Do a double negative. I ain't paying nothing for normal tickets. So unless it's like something Avengers Doomsday or something where everything starts crashing and you're desperate to get your ticket anyway, like I had to do with Spider-Man when I went to movietickets.com because nothing was working. It's like, okay, I will actually buy tickets and I'll forego my normal, what I'm getting, you know, what I should be getting, but through the club, because I want to make sure I get my seats for the show that I want. But it's good if it actually turns out that's what it is for you, then that's good. That's not a bad deal then.
For sure. Yeah, I wanted to mention it because we're coming up on March. So that means definitely towards the middle/end of March. Why did I forget the name? The space movie that I'm excited
for. Project Hail Mary.
Yes, Project Hail Mary. Thank you.
The tickets are on sale now, aren't they?
I don't know. I don't usually buy tickets when they go on sale. I'm not that kind of a person. I feel like going to the theater now. I'm not usually like opening night or any of that sort of stuff. So
I thought, let's see, Project Hail Mary. They're showing, which is another thing I'm going to have to get those tickets for. Let's see. Yep. Project Hail Mary. Oh, nobody bought tickets for Theater 14 yet. I got to do that. Not now because I have to talk to my friend Dan, but yeah, the tickets are on sale. So a regular adult ticket for that movie would be $19.49, not counting the booking fee. So for me, because I'm in the Regal Unlimited, it would be a whopping 50 cents just, and that's a total, but that's because it includes the transaction fee.
Yeah, but I think I want to see it in IMAX, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would. I have nothing near me where I could see it in IMAX, nothing that close. So I don't even have the option.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag GLCast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, or if you want our Discord information, 708 Lantern, let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.